Hello, and welcome to show number 2438 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
This is not an issue of laws. We don't need new laws passed so that we have a right to ride. We need enforcement for the laws that are already in place.
And as we'll learn in today's episode, sometimes laws aren't good enough in making ride shares accessible to people with guide dogs.
Rideshare drivers often deny service to passengers with guide dogs in spite of company policies and laws protecting them. We'll talk with Amy Salger, alumni engagement manager at Guide Dogs for the Blind, and board member Melba Velez-Ortiz about a survey conducted by Guide Dogs for the Blind, highlighting the alarming rise in discrimination and the fight for accessible transportation. And if you're really interested in that topic, on October 15th, there will be a demonstration in San Francisco making a statement that this discrimination is unacceptable. Now for our tip of the week. This week, we have two tips from Amy Salger, one very specific and the other very general.
I would actually have two tips. One would be join Guide Dogs for the Blind's community. And my second is you can't control what happens to you, but you can control how you react to it.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Amy and Melba.
Today we have two guests with us, and I thought maybe we'd introduce them in alphabetical order. So Amy, you want to start? Tell us who you are and what you do.
Thank you. This is Amy Salger, and I am the Alumni Engagement Manager at Guide Dogs for the Blind. I am fortunate to work remotely from Iowa, and my first guide dog, Marsala, is around here somewhere taking a little nap. And I work with the Alumni Association, so anyone who has graduated from any of our programs, the Canine Buddy Program, the OMI Orientation Mobility Immersion Program, or our Guide Dog Handler, are part of our alumni. And I get to work with the Alumni Association Board of Directors. And then I also work on getting client feedback and our alumni into the strategic development and planning part of Guide Dogs for the Blind.
And you said that you had a guide dog. So I assume that you have a vision issue?
I do. And yes, I was diagnosed with Stargardt's disease back when I was 13 years old and quickly went from about 20/20 vision to legally blind in approximately 9 months. Obviously, like any other thing else, it has progressed differently and gotten worse throughout the years. But I have been fortunate. I got paired with Marsala. We've been partners since 2015. So it's been an excellent adventure over the last 9 years.
Great. And our second guest is Melba. So Melba, maybe you can tell people who you are and what you do.
Well, hello. So my name is Melba Velez-Ortiz. I am a professor of communications in honors at Grand Valley State University in beautiful West Michigan, Allendale, Michigan, to be specific. I was born with retinitis pigmentosa. I was diagnosed when I was about 22 years old, and I became a cane user a few years after that. It wasn't until 2015, just like Amy, that I was approved at the Guide Dogs for the Blind. My application was approved and I was able to go in and train and work with my spectacular companion and partner, Chad, who is by now known as Professor Chad, because since I get to teach for a living, my dog goes into the classroom as well. By the way, I are also members of the Alumni Association of Guide Dogs for the Blind. We're actually members of the Board of Directors. I've had the privilege of working in the travel team, in the gratitude team, in a number of media content team, and in a variety of contexts. And it's been a joy. And Chad and I have been working together for almost 9 beautiful years.
Well, you know, this is really meant as a compliment to the Guide Dogs for the Blind organization. The two of you sound so excited and enthusiastic about having your guide dogs. And we have heard that attitude from many, many people we've spoken to who use guide dogs.
And Guide Dogs for the Blind is a great organization if someone is interested in guide dogs. But we have other things in mind to talk about today.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is the difficulties people with guide dogs have been experiencing in trying to get services from rideshare providers, as well as a survey that Guide Dogs for the Blind has done on the subject.
Not too long ago, we did an episode featuring some people from Uber talking about rideshare and how accessible it was and how well it worked for people who are blind or disabled. But I understand there's also another side to that story, and that's what we're here to talk about today. So maybe, Amy, you can give us kind of an overview of what we'll be talking about.
Yeah, I'd absolutely love to. Unfortunately, there is another side, and it's not quite as rosy as what they were able to portray. The reality is, I think a lot of individuals with visual impairment were very excited about Uber's Lyfts. It was providing another way to be able to move around independently, especially when you needed to go a little bit further in things. And one of the things that started coming up, and I don't remember how many years ago it was that people who had guide dogs were starting to get denied their Uber rides. And it was starting to affect a lot of the alumni within Guide Dogs for the Blind as a result of the consistent alumni saying that they were getting denied. One of the project teams that the alumni board decided to focus on was to conduct a survey to get a better sense of what it was that people were experiencing. And that is what we're going to be talking about today. Their results that we came from this survey were very surprising in the sense of how extreme some of these cases and situations were as alumni and as guide dog users. And having already heard people getting denied, we were not completely surprised. But at the same time, there definitely were some results that were very shocking.
And as you say, the results were kind of surprising. I mean, I think the general attitude is, from people's perceptions, is that, oh, you know, Uber takes anybody. That's part of their rules and regulations. So unless you're one of the people who has experienced an issue, you may not be aware of the issues.
That is correct. That was one of the biggest things we found, is that the general population is completely unaware of the denial situation that is going on. And there's a multitude of factors that address this or that are impacted. And we're going to talk about how it impacts the alumni individually, but, you know, it's more than just the idea of it goes against a person's civil rights. It's how it affects us emotionally, psychologically, socially, economically, which are some of the results we'll talk about.
So just to put this in perspective a little bit, you obviously had a whole lot of people responding to your survey. Did you get a feel for the frequency with which people are denied ride shares because they have a guide dog?
Yes, 83% of all of our respondents, and that's overwhelming evidence, reported not just being denied every once in a while or, you know, one time, but regularly. That's what our study uncovered.
83%?
83%.
Wow.
And that's a staggering number, because again, it's not as though they're reporting a one-time denial either. 83% of our respondents said, this happens to me fairly often.
And what was interesting, we read the report that you sent us to review beforehand. And what was interesting is, it wasn't just that they missed a ride and they called another Uber and someone picked them up, but it dramatically affected their interactions with other professionals, say medical professionals, where they had to get to an appointment on time, or, you know, it was pretty disruptive to them, right?
Absolutely. And there were three general categories where we found the greatest impact. Please keep in mind also, we're not the first one to look into this issue. Guide dogs themselves, back in 2022, had partnered with the American Federation for the Blind, and they started a tally, pretty much a database of denials. But the thing is, as a researcher, I know that numbers only tell part of the story. Oftentimes, when you really get to the true impact of a phenomena, of an issue, is when people are able to express those things in words. So we didn't want to just compile a bunch of numbers regarding denials, although that is very worrisome. What we wanted to do was find out how in the world this affects someone who has to go through this. Three general areas we found. Psychological impacts were by far the most prominent. And these vary from severe feelings of anxiety to talk about trauma. The word trauma came up time and time again in regards to describing what it's like to be denied on a regular basis. Frustration, feelings of degradation, demoralization, worry, and even stress. Because when we think about the denial, when it happens so often, it's not that you suffer at that moment, but over time, you begin to worry about the denial before it ever happens again. So you're carrying this stress with you at all times. And so psychological impacts were the most prevalent. But there were also economic impacts, just as you're describing. People are missing out on job interviews. People are missing out on other economic opportunities related to their jobs and related to side gigs and all other kinds of things. People are being asked to pay for Uber Pet, to pay a higher price for a ride when our guide dogs are the equivalent of a wheelchair in many regards. So there should not be an onus on us to pay more for that service. And lastly, And very worrisome as well, there's lots of social impacts around these denials. People who live independently want to attend weddings. They want to get to social events. But if you don't have reliable transportation, over time, you start staying home a little bit more. And that feeling of isolation for people who are visually impaired is already something that we struggle with every day. Imagine how magnified it becomes when you now realize you really don't have a reliable way to join your community and partake in these kinds of activities.
Well, it's interesting, as you say, the 83% and numbers don't tell the whole story by a long shot. There are many more aspects to this that the numbers don't convey that are very important.
And the words are gut-wrenching. I'm not generalizing these examples, but I'm giving you a few of the anecdotes that our participants shared with us. We had reports of physical violence against our guide dog handlers, you know, people wanting to remove them physically from a car. We had reports of drivers offering to put the cars in the dogs in the trunk for the duration of the ride. We had reports of people who, for instance, one that I really got to my heart was someone who reported that their mother was in a retirement community and she didn't have access to transportation, and the person was living independently. And so the only way to get to her location was with this rideshare denial because there wasn't a bus access to that. And to hear people say that this person has more or less decided they're not going to visit their mother as often because they don't have a reliable way to get there. It's heart-wrenching, and not just for the guide dog user, but for the mother. I mean, this impacts the whole community when we put these barriers in front of regular citizens who just want to live their lives.
So when we were talking to the representatives from Uber, they made it very clear that Uber has a policy that drivers must take guide dogs. And I assume Lyft and other services have similar policies. But this obviously isn't totally doing the trick. Did you come up with any recommendations or suggestions of how this could be improved?
The focus of the survey was to have it be educational, to provide people with the information of the fact that these situations are going on. The purpose for the survey was not to, you know, look at legal action or anything like that. However, because of the significant impact that the denials are having on our alumni, individuals from Guide Dogs for the Blind have had conversations with Uber and have talked with them about these things. And Uber did make some minor changes, but unfortunately, there really wasn't much in regards to the enforcement of how to handle this when someone does deny a ride. So they're still trying to have some of those conversations and trying to improve it, but it does remain an issue. We actually just had a friend 2 days ago who went to get picked up from the airport and was denied a ride at that time. So the issue is becoming more and more. And like I said, we're trying to educate people because that's where those changes can start to occur.
So you said that a number of guide dog users have voiced their feedback to Uber, but it's kind of anecdotal evidence. And I'm wondering if you shared this report with Uber themselves directly and had any feedback from that.
That I cannot completely comment on. We have provided the results to all of our alumni. I believe that our marketing team did also share this with Uber. I also believe that the couple of individuals who have been working on this have shared it. The other thing that is going on is Lynn Dubinsky, who is one of our vice presidents, she has been working and collaborating with other guide dog schools as well, because obviously this is not just Guide Dogs for the Blind alumni who are being impacted. This is other guide dog users as well as other service dogs. It's, you know, there's other types of service dogs as well that are experiencing the same thing. And so there is working on some collaboration of trying to continue to promote change. One of the things that has come out from this as well as department is that the DOJ has asked for people to file their complaints with them, and they have a very easy way for that to happen. We've continually worked on providing that information to our alumni as well, so that in addition to filing the complaint with that particular rideshare organization, they are also able to file it with DOJ to where other actions can continue to be documented.
How would somebody get in touch with the Department of Justice?
We actually have that information on our website. If someone were to go to www.guidedogs.com, there is a link there that provides, in relation to the rideshare survey, it gives all of the rideshare survey information, as well as gives that information as to being able to connect to DOJ and file that complaint.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was going to be my next question, was what suggestions you have for individuals to, you know, assist with this problem, make people more aware of the problem, because unless people are aware of a problem, they're not going to fix it. Are there any other suggestions you have for people along those lines?
Talking with people is one of the ways. Also, I've had a couple of presentations lately where, in just discussing the advantages of working with a guide dog and how that's positively impacted my life, I was also able to bring up the fact of the denials that were going on. And so many people are also very shocked. Again, they're not aware of it. And so that helps educate, which then can allow, I know some people just in the general population have started to have conversations with rideshare drivers and, you know, began to try to address it that way too. And have obviously found a combination of where people would say, oh no, I would pick up those dogs without any issue. And others who say, well, and then had allowed for that conversation to happen.
As a guide dog user, I've engaged in those conversations as well. Of course, we have to remember that these also can exert a certain amount of energy on the part of guide dog users. And so on their study as well, many of our participants commented on how exhausting it is to have to screenshot all the details of a driver in case they will deny you, and having to keep track of all of those things, having to get on the phone and be put on hold, and having to, you know, organize yourself and plan ahead, knowing that you might get denied two or three times before you can get to your destination. And so having to get up that much earlier, or having to call for transportation much earlier. So doing a lot of these things does take a toll on people, but it is important because this is not an issue of laws. We don't need new laws passed so that we have a right to ride. We need enforcement for the laws that are already in place. In California, it used to be that these rideshare companies would designate themselves legally as technology companies. And for that reason, they're not subject to these fairness laws and equity laws. But the moment that they're considered or designated a transportation company, then all of these guarantees and protections become that much more relevant. So from a political perspective, from an advocacy perspective, that's also something we should consider. To what extent can we hold these companies accountable as transportation companies and not simply as technology companies?
So we've talked about this issue, and it's clearly a problem for a number of people. And we've talked about, you know, how to remedy the problem in the long term and what people can do to help with that effort. I'm wondering if there are any suggestions you have for people, knowing that the problem exists, kind of minimizing the disruption and angst in their life. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, they can't really pick an Uber driver, their favorite driver. Can they call ahead of time to check to see if the driver will take a dog? Or what other ways might there be to ameliorate the situation?
So that's a really interesting question for numerous reasons. And there are some people who do choose to put in their profile that they have a guide dog. There are people who will identify that after a driver has been willing to accept a call for the ride. However, there's been people who will accept it knowing that a service dog will be there, pull up, and then take off and deny. So although, yes, there are those steps that can help in certain situations, it is also still happening that people are accepting that they will do that and then they will take off once that they are there. And that's where Melba was talking about one of the recommendations that we encourage anyone who's calling for a ride is to note the driver, try to take a picture of the car as it's pulling up, any type of documentation that they're able to have so that they can accurately file that complaint.
Is there anything we missed?
One thing that I was thinking about as we were talking, well, actually two things. One was in regards to Pete, that question about like doing something else. I'm sure there could be some people who might be listening to this go, well, okay, you know what, if you have all these issues with rideshare, Lyft, just take a bus or a taxi or this or that. And as Melba pointed out in one of her comments, the reality is that those public transportation do not exist everywhere. You know, if you're someone who lives in a highly populated area, it can be difficult to think that, but that is absolutely true. I live in a small town. We have no public transportation. And so, you know, there are many other places and locations that have that same type of thing. And then also, Nancy, you know, you had mentioned earlier of how excited Melba and I are when we talk about our guides. And from your guys' experiences, I think you find that with anyone you talk about who works with a guide dog, just the positive impact that they have on our lives. And there actually are some people who are considering not getting guide dogs because of the rideshare denial issues that are out there right now. So thinking of how people may lose out on that level of independence and sociability just as a result of this issue is very heartbreaking.
The way in the world, the physical world we're living in, requires us to depend on these rideshare companies. The bus will probably not get to many of the places you need to go these days. So this is something of a civil rights issue that does impact people severely. And it's something that needs to be addressed. We have a right to ride, and so do our dogs.
Well, I thank you for educating our listeners on this very important topic and hopefully raising awareness among people, along with some ideas of how they might deal with this issue and hopefully solve it in the longer term. Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about Guide Dogs for the Blind and their recent survey about rideshare denials of service, as well as how to contact them.
Well, if people are interested in finding out more about the Guide Dogs for the Blind Association, getting a guide dog and things like that, where would you send them?
We would send them to our webpage. They can find all of the information on there, www.guidedogs.com. And like I said, they would be able to access the rideshare information. There's information on there about the Alumni Association, and there's information on there about the three different programs that we offer. And something that I think is an important aspect, but Guide Dogs for the Blind does not charge for their services with their clients, regardless of which program you are involved with. It is something that they provide that service to clients without cost. But at the same time, the other really neat fact is that Guide Dogs for the Blind does not receive any state, local, or federal funding. Everything is based completely on donations, fundraisers, estates. So that's another way if you would like to get involved and help support this wonderful mission. There's also information on the website of being able to donate or participate in other ways.
And if somebody had a question or a comment, how would they reach the folks at the Guide Dogs for the Blind?
There are various opportunities on the website. There's different emails that they can connect to. And the 800 number is 1-800-295-4050. And that goes into our general line, and they'll be able to help direct to the most appropriate person.
If somebody wanted to reach either of you, how would they reach you two?
This is Amy, and my email address is simply the first letter of my first name and then my last name. So it is A as in Apple, S as in Sam, A as in Apple, L as in Larry, G as in George, E as in Echo, R as in Robert, @guidedogs.com.
And the best way to get a hold of me is through Amy. By all means, if you contact Amy, she'll be able to pull myself or anyone that has expertise in whatever the public needs to know. She's quite wonderful at what she does.
Does Guide Dogs for the Blind have a social media presence?
Yes, they do. Guide Dogs for the Blind has presence on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Flickr.
And if you activate the link for this episode, which is 2438, you'll find all that information you just heard in the audio at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about one of the important stages of creating a guide dog, raising them as puppies. Learn what it is like to raise a guide dog puppy. We'll talk with Lauren Grimditch, puppy raising field manager for Guide Dogs for the Blind, and Jenny Trow, a dedicated volunteer. They will discuss the journey of raising guide dogs, the responsibilities involved, and the rewarding experiences of volunteers who help shape these future heroes.
Well, we both learned something from that interview, and we hope our listeners did too. So join us next week for another interesting episode.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.